on the download. Political comedian Hari Kondabolu, Chicago Tribune theater critic Chris Jones, and live coverage of the Republican National Convention. And now, here's your host, a man who needs a wellness check, Justin Kaufman.
It's not for the heat, just in general. Welcome to The Download, everybody, here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. You know who needs a wellness check? Those rabbits in the front of my yard. I showed them who's boss today. I didn't do anything in particular.
Oh.
I just sat out there for like 3 hours.
Intimidation?
Intimidation. And I know this sounds terrible, and we're picking up on the conversation from yesterday, but I saw the rabbit. The rabbit saw me. The rabbit slowly backed out of my yard and crossed the street. And in my mind, and I know this is awful, but I was like, where's that speeder now?
Oh.
Where's the guy now who's going too fast when I'm out there and I'm always mad? You know, like when I was a kid, we had one in our neighborhood. This guy who had like a cool Camaro.
Mm-hmm.
And he would like tear it up in Wonder Lake, Illinois. It's very redundant. You know, be like on the back roads of Wonder Lake, Illinois, opening it up. But, you know, my brother and I at 11 or 8 years old are playing in the park. And each family has someone like that down the road. But this guy's, you know, got his Def Leppard cranked to good old 10 and his Alpine, you know, playing Photograph, rolling in his Camaro. And what my dad would do, and one time I saw him, is amazing. I came out to the yard, and I was a little bit older when he did this. And my younger brother is there, and he's like, he goes, "Now, Dad." And he turns around and he just huzzes the ball like at the street. There's no car coming, but here comes a fast car going down the street. It's like a teenager driving, you know, and the ball just missed the Camaro. And then the guy slowed down. And it was like, that was my dad's way of like essentially intimidating the guy. So in a weird way, I was hoping that guy would reincarnate himself today on my street just for once to show that rabbit. But no luck.
So your plants are gone.
They're pretty much gone. The rabbit has... Yesterday, to catch up, I got some deer repellent, as the gardener told me to. I put it on my plants, came home, and there were a ton of flies everywhere. So mm-hmm. I had to get rid of that. I had to do water nonstop for a day, essentially. And now I have to decide what I'm going to do next.
There's a million people...
Right. They gave me great advice yesterday.
Things, yeah.
Great advice. Tabasco sauce.
Mm-hmm.
One caller called in, said, a knife, essentially. You can eat rabbit, I guess. It's not against the law. They're not
protected in any way.
Although I find that hard to believe, that if I'm out there trying to stab a rabbit and a police officer comes by, they're going to be like, "Hey, good luck, buddy. Have fun."
I love rabbits, though. They're on my walk home every night. There's one in a lawn right where I walk by. I'm like, "Oh, look at that little guy." Just, you know.
I know. I'm turning much more into Bill Murray from Caddyshack than I ever thought I would, because I was the same way. And my wife in times has been like, "We should bring this," because there's a baby rabbit too, and we should bring this rabbit in. Oh, mm-hmm. So cute. He looks like he's lost. He's not lost. He's waiting for you to turn your back so we can eat your Home Depot flowers. I spent a lot of time picking those out at Home Depot, and now they're gone. Like, my front yard is essentially all just green leaves. All my pretty pink and white and purple and yellow flowers are gone.
Well, let's get the botanical gardens guy in.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, let's get the knife.
No. We can figure this out peacefully.
Peacefully. You know what? Practice what I preach. I want the city to be a more peaceful place. Then I have to be peaceful with my rabbit neighbors. All right. I'll let you know how that goes.
Try it out.
We've got a great show tonight here on The Download. An exciting show. Political comedian Hari Kondabolu will be in studio coming up here in the 7:30 hour. Actually, he's on the phone. But he will be here on the show on The Download. We'll talk about his comedy album. And he's coming to Chicago to play Hideout next week. Also, tonight, Chris Jones is going to join us later to talk about the Goodman premiere of War Paint, the big musical that is on stage at the Goodman. We'll get a review from him. Also, Thrones, the musical parody, it came out this week. The Game of Thrones is not going to return till next summer. So if you need your Game of Thrones fix, the Apollo Theater, starting a new parody show tomorrow night. And, of course, Mike Pence takes the stage as the vice presidential candidate for the Republican Party tonight. Charles Lipson and Chris Roebling will be in studio, a ride shotgun, and we are going to bring you the speech in its entirety. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. Stay with us. I love it. People are now texting in pictures of Elmer Fudd to me. Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting rabbits. It's very good. Very good. It's true, though. I am hunting rabbits. But I've decided to come to the table for negotiations for a peace settlement with my neighborhood rabbit. All right, let's get to the carryout here. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The Republican National Convention escalates into day three with another round of Hillary bashing. Listen, I'm not a Hillary supporter, but do Republicans have any ideas of their own? Or is it just straight up, put Hillary in jail? And this just in, a Trump advisor said that Hillary Clinton should be shot for treason. Come on, really? Make America safe again? Hillary's got blood on her hands. Make America work again? Hillary should be put in jail. Make America first again? Hillary should be shot? What's Thursday have in store? Tar and feather? Are they going to kidnap her and suspend her from the rafters? Talk about your own stuff. Talk about banning Muslims or putting up a wall or how China owns us. Even denying climate change is better than this. Vice presidential candidate Mike Pence speaks tonight. Going to be interesting to see how he ratchets up the Hillary rhetoric. My guess, Hillary Pinata. Protests heated up a little bit in Cleveland today with a couple of arrests and a couple of assaults on officers, but still relatively quiet in terms of political convention protests. I don't know, wake me up when it gets all Chicago 1968 up in here, huh? A speechwriter copped to plagiarizing Michelle Obama with Melania Trump's speech on Monday. You know, because Melania just has so much respect for Obama. Haven't heard that publicly before, so maybe continue that trend. But now some are wondering why a Trump employee is working for the campaign and did that possibly violate election law? Meh. Violating election law is something rich guys put on plaques. In state politics, a judge removed a proposed constitutional amendment from the ballot over legislative redistricting. This was a Governor Rauner initiative to take the politics out of redistricting, i.e. away from Mike Madigan, which in Illinois would be like removing milk from cereal or money from politics. It just doesn't, you can't. Dems responded by just drawing new lines around Rauner's mansion. So, Governor, you're now represented by Ken Duncan. That'll teach you. A judge said that the development of the old post office building in the South Loop can begin. Yay! I hope they do something great with that building, which straddles 290. I say indoor water park. Or maybe like the biggest Panda Express in the world. Or I don't know, how about a post office? In astronomy news, scientists say that two exoplanets that are orbiting a star appear to be rocky, therefore maybe habitable. When hearing this news, humans were like, let me at it! I'll ruin that planet so fast! Cool Ranch Doritos for everybody! Woohoo! In weather, oh boy, it's hot out, and it's going to get hotter. You know it's hot when the president tweets out that it's hot. And that's hot. The excessive heat starts tomorrow. The city and media have done a pretty good job with the warnings, eh? If anyone doesn't know it's going to be hot tomorrow, well, it's kind of on you at this point. Get a box fan. In sports, the Cubs take the series against the Mets on the back of Anthony Rizzo, who hit two more home runs today. It's that time of year where we start talking MVP, and well, Rizzo, he should be MVP. And at this point, Kyle Hendricks, Cy Young, the Cubs' fifth starter, wins again, this time pitching shutout ball into the seventh inning. He's got a 2.27 ERA right now. This is the Cubs' fifth starter. To quote Twitter, that's amazeballs. The Cubs made a trade, too, to get Seattle left-hand reliever Mike Montgomery, which will end the Dan Vogelbach era in Chicago. He's going to be a star in Seattle. He's going to be like a Justin Smoke star. You just watch. The White Sox somehow lost in Seattle today to lose the series. Extra innings, too. Of course, extra innings.
Big day for Melky Cabrera, though. He's hot. Melky's hot. Test his urine. Still 6 or 7 or 9 or 15. Who cares? How many? A lot of games back. You know, and also, don't get on a roll right now and force us all to wonder if you're legit right before the trade deadline. That was so last year. We're still paying for that. Smartja. Have I mentioned that we're only like 1 week away from Bears camp? So 1 week to get your affairs in order, get that yard work taken care of, clean out the garage, play with your kids, because starting next week, football is back. The Bears signed former Panthers offensive lineman Amini Silatulu. Let me try that out. Silatulu with the block! Holding on Silatulu? You can't make that mistake and back up your team, Silatulu. The Bears just look out of sync, fourth down again.
Yeah, I could see it. I could see it. It fits.
In hockey news, former Blackhawks rent-a-player Brad Richards retired after 15 years. Hey, we rented at the right time since he won a Stanley Cup with the team back in 2015. And finally tonight, California GOP delegates have come down with the norovirus. Hey, we've always known politics to be full of crap, but this is just taking it over the top. Well, that's the carryout for July 20th, 2016. We're giving away free water for the heat wave. I mean, it's tap water, but still, it's free. What do you care?
Coming up, we're going to have a good conversation with Hori Kondabolu. He's a great comedian from New York. Talk about his show that's coming up here at the Hideout, as well as a new album that he's dropping. It's coming up this hour. Big night tonight, RNC, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Big night tonight at the Republican National Convention. Rob Martyr, we've got Marco Rubio.
Oh, man.
Ted Cruz.
Wow.
And then, of course, Mike Pence. That's like a great, that's like coming up the bottom of the fourth. You get Rubio, Cruz, and Pence. It's not going to be
Hang
good.
On. Yeah. Melissa, sweetie. Yeah. Can you DVR this? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. All right. Good. Just want to make sure I got
Pam
it all.
Bondi, the attorney general from Florida, is on stage right now.
Absolutely.
That's just a big absolutely.
Look, I've got CNN in one monitor. I've got Geraldo Rivera on Fox
so
in
many.
The other. Which really, quite frankly, is a true testament to this country's tolerance that Geraldo Rivera is still on TV. I mean, honestly,
it is
unbelievably amazing that this man has carved out a career in broadcasting.
Are you sure it's not archive TV? Like it's something on, like it's MeTV or something, and they're showing the old Capone stuff, and you're just
Well, here's my theory. That they keep throwing Geraldo out in these protests, and somehow he'll manage to get arrested.
Yeah, or punched.
A chair thrown at him.
I'm being set on fire right now. This is great TV.
Look, here I am close to the American flag that will not ignite. Ma'am, are you... Here, wait, let me help you.
I guess if you were going to put a guy out there to cover the protest in some engaging, buffoonish kind of style, that would be the guy I'd go with, Jerry Rivers.
Yeah, that's right. You know?
Jerry Rivers out here. And on...
We love you, Jerry.
We love you, Jerry.
Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this week, the new stand-up comedy album Mainstream American Comic will be released. It's the latest from New York-based comedian Hori Kondabolu.
My parents are getting older, right? When you have older parents, you have to have difficult conversations with them. What they want for their final wishes, right? Cremation, funeral. These are difficult conversations that I've been having recently. And because I am who I am, I decided it was time to tell my parents what I wanted for my final wishes, right? So I told them, I said, if I'm ever murdered, it's very important that the killer doesn't get the death penalty because I don't believe in state violence. So don't push for the death penalty. I don't want my death to lead to another death. Regardless of what this person did to me or to my body, I don't want the killer to get the death penalty. And I remember what my mother said to me. She said, why do you always have to ruin dinner? It's not about dinner, Mom. It's about my final wishes. And they should be respected. You're not that famous, Hori. Nobody's gonna kill you, okay? You don't know that. Dad tells people I'm Aziz Ansari. You don't even know. I could be killed by accident.
The new album is out on the Portland-based record label Kill Rockstars. Kondabolu tours the world with his comedy, and he's shown up all over movies and television, including late-night talk shows and a writing stint on the FX show Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell. He and Bell just launched a new podcast called Politically Reactive, and Hurry's coming to Chicago for a show at the Hideout on July 30th. Hari Kondabolu is one of the best political comedians working today, and he joins me tonight on The Download. Hurry, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. Absolutely.
How often do you get through Chicago?
I've been going a lot more often. Usually, it used to be maybe like once a year, and now it's been like, I think it's the third trip I've made to Chicago in some capacity. I did a show with W. Kamau Bell like a few months back for a nonprofit, and I was here, I think, also recently to do the Voices of the People History of the United States, like the Howard Zinn book. Yeah, we had a bunch of different people like reading excerpts of it, so I got to do that in Chicago as well. So I'm in Chicago a lot, but this is the first time I've done like a full stand-up show in about a year.
Oh, that's great. When you come to Chicago, I mean, you've done a lot of different types of shows. Obviously, doing a show in the back of a bar like The Hideout, is that your preferred method of doing a stand-up show, sort of inside to a back room bar kind of thing?
Generally, no. Like, I remember the first time I went to The Hideout to do a show, I was nervous. I'm like, oh, it's a back room of a bar. It's not like, I like theater spaces, like things that are intimate and where people, you know, are there to see you and they didn't stumble in. And also, like, you know, there's standing room. And I know, like, usually with standing room shows, like, people get tired and they get frustrated, especially later at night. So, you know, I was really nervous about those shows that died out, and they went great. You know, there's something about that venue and the energy that's there. And it is fairly intimate. Like, I had a killer couple of shows last time I was there, and I wanted to do it again. And plus, that's such a legendary venue. Like, yeah. The Hideout is incredible and has such an incredible history in terms of, like, both activism and the performers that have gone through there. Like, it's the perfect space for me.
Well, that's one thing about us Chicagoans. We can stand for an hour.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that we're good at. Well, you have a pretty diverse background. Before doing comedy, you were an organizer for immigrant rights in Seattle. How does having a life outside of comedy and the arts, how does that help your stand-up?
It certainly gives you perspective. I think that's a really key part of this. I think when you get caught up in the industry part of it or just writing, you forget that the world is happening around you. And that's why sometimes, like, you'll see comics do stand-up and so much of their act is about the industry or about famous people they've met, or it becomes so narrow because they haven't actually lived a real life in a while. And luckily, I'm not super famous, so, like, I have complete access to the real world and kind of have health insurance. So, yeah, I mean, like, it certainly is important to do. And I think in Seattle, it's, you know, I still go back there constantly just because it's the place where I started doing stand-up, the place where I organized. A lot of my best friends are there. And they're folks that kind of keep me in check, which I think is important. Folks that keep my ego in check and also challenge me when I make a joke and maybe it's, like, it's a little wonky. It doesn't quite have the tone that I normally have or have the ideas that I normally have, or maybe some of the shots are, you know, 'cause I try to, like, make really targeted strikes to the things I want to tackle. And I don't want to, you know, hurt somebody else without, you know, like, I want intention behind the things I'm saying. So, you know, having people that, like, really can question you is important to me because I think as a stand-up, you know, when you're hanging around with other stand-ups, there's a bottom-line approach. Is it funny? Is it not funny? And I haven't been that guy in a long time. Like, I wanted to say something and be funny. It has to be funny, but, like, I wanted to say what I wanted to say.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, you hear a lot of comedians will take out new material on the road and let the audience be the judge or like you said, other stand-up comedians. But it is important for a comedian to have an inner circle that's going to be able to say if you've crafted the joke in the way that you want to.
I think so. I mean, comedians definitely, like, we all give each other tags for jokes and ideas, and that's certainly part of it. But, you know, the stuff I talk about, some of it isn't just comedic angles. It's also I need, like other perspectives to think about when I'm trying to complete the joke. The jokes I can get to. It's the shaping the point of view, the argument that, you know, can be the harder part.
We're speaking with stand-up comedian Hari Kondabolu. He is going to be at The Hideout on July 30th. He's got a new album that's coming out this week. You know, for you growing up as an Indian-American comic in Queens, you know, it's probably hard to find people, I guess, to relate to in a way. There weren't a lot of Indian stand-ups. Talk about that and what drove you to want to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't that many examples, especially when I started. Like, I didn't know any like, I hadn't heard of any Indian American stand-up comedians when I started. I was 17. I was in high school. And the reason I wanted to do stand-up to begin with is I saw Margaret Cho do stand-up on TV. This is back in, like, the early days of Comedy Central when they had, like, eight things. They just kept repeating right. over and over again.
That and Kids and in the Hall, so, right?
Right, exactly. Like, in reruns of SNL. But they played that Margaret Cho's HBO special where she's wearing a leather bodysuit. Like, it felt like every week. And I would watch it over and over. And in addition to just thinking she was hilarious, it was also, like, amazing for me to see somebody who wasn't black, white, or Latino, right? Like, this is an Asian-American person talking about her immigrant parents, talking about growing up in San Francisco. And people were listening and valuing what she had to say. So as an early role model, she certainly was that. But there weren't any like brown people I could see or relate to. And, you know, it's kind of funny. Like, when you're in that situation, you become the comic that the 12-year-old you wanted to see. Because there were no examples. You know, there weren't, you know, you end up having to be the role model for the next generation. And it's been kind of a cool era to see, like, Aziz and, like, Cousin Minaj and all these other mm-hmm. South Asian comics and actors, and Russell Peters, like, it's been cool to see so and such diverse voices, too. It's great.
Well, I mean, I read somewhere that when you would go to comedy clubs as a kid, they would always put you up in the front row so the white yeah. comics would have the guys to point out and make fun of. And there was never anyone that would represent you to be the counterpoint.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love the Comedy Cellar. Let me just, like, preface that with this. Like, it's still, you know, it's a club. I got asked to perform there years ago, and I said no, because even though I've been on TV and all this other stuff, I still see it as a sacred ground almost for comedy. And so I just didn't have the guts to do it. But, yeah, me and my friends, we used to go there regularly, because once you were 18, you were allowed to go. And there was an internet offer where you could just buy two sodas and watch a Tuesday night show, which is the night where, like, a lot of the comics are working out material. So you got to see Marin and Todd Barry and Colin Quinn and Jim Norton and Greg Giraldo. I mean, the list goes on of amazing comics who, and you're seeing them develop stuff. You know, it was incredible, but they always stick us in the front. And initially we were excited, like, this is so cool. We're kids from Queens. We traveled an hour 45 to get to the Village. We're sitting in the front row of the Comedy Cellar. And then you realize, oh, This is we're fodder now. Like, we are prominent. We have the light on us. We're brown. Like, it was every cliche thing you could say. Now, it was at the time, maybe it wasn't as cliche for everybody else. It was for us. Yeah, I mean, we ended up just constantly getting, like, drilled. And, you know, the first time it's kind of cool. Oh, we get to be part of the show. But then every time you're like, we're just props. This sucks. And there was never another voice. There was never any, like, when people tell you to take a joke, it's like, fine. But I wish there was somebody else who could do the other part
right,
of it.
Right, right.
Where you were actually going after, like, this is what it's like to be a person of color in a white world. And so it was kind of cool for me to, like, be able to be that comic. Like, I wish I was able to be there after some of the things I saw. I wish I was able to perform after some of those comics.
Well, you take on a lot of political and social issues in your act, and I read somewhere that you take on the philosophy of issues like immigration or racism or poverty, and those are serious issues, but in your act, you try not to take them seriously, that you can be a comic voice in approaching some things that are complicated in our society.
You have to be a comic at the end of the day, you know, and I think if you're going to talk about heavy things, like, you got to make sure there's enough, you know, release valves in a bit. You got, you know, you have to pace yourself. You have to make sure there's a payoff. Otherwise, that's a hard thing. It's a hard thing to talk about, yeah. Like, whether it's gun violence or war or anything else. If you're going to take that, you better have some jokes. You know, I think early I started to really develop a voice. I wanted to talk about things like, I don't think I got that. Because even though I knew how to write jokes, I was so passionate. It's the first time I was 19 or 20, the first time I really thought about things critically. All I wanted to do was share my, like, what I learned and what I cared about with, you know, with everybody in that room. And I stopped telling jokes. And, I mean, that's the worst thing. You know, you don't want to see a comic simply ranting about things without jokes. Right. That's not what people pay to see. You know, there's town halls for that. There's video blogs for that now. There's places where you can just rant and showcase that to the world. But if you're a comic, be a good comic. Right. Like, actually know how to do the job of being a comic. And if you don't have jokes with your ideas, yeah, write a blog. You know, there's other ways to do
there's
it.
There's other things out there for you. There's other outlets.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, like, right now with everything that's happening in our world when it comes to protests and Black Lives Matter and just the unrest that's happening around the country, it always seems to be that comics quickly can percolate to the top and be the voice of some of this change, or at least be in a position to lead a movement online or, you know, in social media and those kind of places. And you've been able to do that because you've taken on politicians. You've gotten Twitter wars with... from your couch, talk about the idea of being a politically and socially relevant comedian in this day and age with social media and whatever, when the country's going through so much stuff.
Well, I mean, one of the great things about stand-up is that it's immediate. So something can happen that day, and that night you're on stage telling jokes about it. It's that fresh. I don't know any other art forms that can do that. But Twitter, like, is like the next step. Like, it's even more immediate than stand-up. Like, you just throw things out there. And sometimes that's extremely irresponsible, dangerous, because your thoughts aren't always fully formed. But it also means that when a moment happens, you find a way to kind of say something that encapsulate a key part of it, like a key opinion or a hypocrisy you see or poor coverage. Like, you can immediately call bullshit, like, really quickly, in a way that you couldn't before. And stand-ups are good at calling bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what we do for a living. We call bullshit. We find inconsistencies. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's not surprising that stand-ups are built to do that. And also, like, you know, we're not supposed to be wonky. We're not supposed to sound like experts. We're supposed to be able to get something quick and thoughtful across and have something to say, but in a joke form. That's a lot more easier to digest than whatever you're seeing on CNN or MSNBC
or
whatever.
Right. And I mean, and with the advent of podcasting, and you're obviously, your podcast, Politically Reactive, but the other stuff where there just seems to be so many outlets for comedians to not only have the crafted joke, but to be able to add their POV to what's happening around the world in instantaneous fashion.
Yeah. I mean, podcasting is it's changed a lot of things. From a business standpoint, it means that, you know, people come to your shows knowing who you are, and not only knowing your stand-up, but knowing who you are.
Right.
And that's one of the best things about when you get to a certain place as a stand-up comedian, where to some degree you don't need to set everything up in terms of this is who I am and this is what I believe in every single thing. The audience knows you. They know kind of the kind of angles you're going to take, and they might laugh at a joke because, yeah, that's something this guy would say. And I feel like podcasting gives you some of that. Like, you know, podcasting for Marc Maron, for example, his audience grew exponentially. And not only that, he was getting, like, single ticket buyers, which right. means that, like, people were going without their friends. They were going by themselves because they listened to his podcast alone. If nobody wants to go, who cares? It's not for them. It's for me. And that's incredible to have fans like that. So from a business perspective, it leads to, like, these incredible fans who are really loyal and really appreciate what you do. And also, you know, creatively, you know, again, it's like the immediacy of discussing something, whether it's something serious or something silly. And I think also, for me, interacting with another comic who has similar sensibilities, like, I'm going to be writing stuff without meaning to write stuff. Things are going to be clicking, and you're engaging in things in a way that, you know, we're alone a lot. A lot of it is solitary. It's cool to be able to actually talk through an idea with somebody you respect and love. So, yeah, it's really been an incredible time period. And I feel in a lot of ways we're really fortunate because we don't need to do what previous generations did, which is just do the road constantly and just get beaten down and depend on people in Hollywood to make the choices of whether this is
so
a person to go to or
yeah.
not. We can just do it ourselves.
It opens so many avenues. The new stand-up comedy album, Mainstream American Comic, is going to be released this week for New York-based comedian Hori Kondabolu. I can't thank you enough for talking to us tonight. You're going to be at the Hideout on July 30th. Hori, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Hey, man. This was really fun. Thank you for having me.
Big night tonight for the RNC. Day 3, Vice Presidential Candidate Mike Pence is going to make his way to the stage in the next, maybe hour. They never really give you a schedule. I mean, I'm sure if you're there, there's a schedule. But we're going to pick up and start talking about the big speech because Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Marco Rubio, and many others tonight, one of the Trump sons, a couple other speakers. There was another speaker I really wanted to, that I was interested in, and I forgot, before Mike Pence. Why am I blanking? It was Rubio.
Scott Walker?
Walker. Pete with the win. Yes, Governor Scott Walker from Wisconsin. That'll all be coming up here between 8 and 10 o'clock. What we're going to do here on the download is we're going to bring you live coverage of that, really in a way that we'll just run Pence's speech. And so Charles Lipson and Chris Roebling are in studio tonight. They've been joining us via telephone for the last 2 days to wrap up the night, but they're going to be in here to sort of preview and give reaction to the Mike Pence speech, which will be coming up. We'll do that starting around 8:30 tonight. Figure that's about the right time to start talking politics. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we're going to continue our conversation. Tonight, we just had Hurry On. We're also going to talk with Emily DeRozas, who is with Thrones, the musical parody. Game of Thrones, of course, announced that season 7 isn't going to start till next summer. So we're going to talk with Emily, who has a lot of experience with Baby Wants Candy here in Chicago and 50 Shades, the musical parody, which was an off-Broadway show. We'll talk with her coming up here at 8 o'clock before we get to all things RNC. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Like I said, coming up at 8:30, Chris Roebling and Charles Lipson will be in studio as we prepare for the vice presidential candidate Mike Pence's speech to the Republican National Convention. That should be coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. I'm not really I probably could have done an easy Google search to figure out exactly when Mike Pence is going on stage, but I like, you know what? I like the mystery of it. I think that's the fun of it. Could be early. Could be like 5 minutes early. But we'll bring you those his speech in his entirety, and we may pop in on a couple of the other senators tonight, Senator Cruz, Senator Rubio, also speaking at the convention, as well as Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. That's coming up. We'll start that coverage after the 8:30 news. Well, it was announced earlier this week that Game of Thrones will return to HBO, but fans will have to wait until summer of 2017. It's a year from now for season 7. So if you can't wait that long for your Thrones fix, then maybe it's time to head over to the Apollo Theater in Lincoln Park for Thrones, the musical parody. It's put on by some of the best improvisers and musicians in Chicago. I'm talking Baby Wants Candy and the off-Broadway show 50 Shades, the musical parody. I mean, top-level caliber stuff from some great people who have spent a lot of time in Chicago. Joining me tonight is producer and former Chicagoan Emily DeRozas. Emily has served as producer for Baby Wants Candy, also co-writer on 50 Shades, and has performed stand-up on Comedy Central's Tosh.0. She joins me now. Hi, Emily. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me.
All right. So this is a big thing for you guys because you have a lot going on. I mean, the idea of the Thrones, this has been highly anticipated. The Tribune was writing about this 3-4 months ago. And at the same time, you guys are heading to Edinburgh soon for the Fringe Festival. So you guys are all over the place.
Game of Thrones cannot be denied. And we will not deny it, Justin. Who am I to deny Game of Thrones? Yeah,
you don't want to do that, right?
No, it's our calling.
Well, let's talk about the show. I mean, obviously, you guys had success with 50 Shades of musical parody. Who's involved in the show, and why did you decide to parody Game of Thrones?
Well, 50 Shades, the musical parody, came a couple years ago, and it kind of was similar in that it's like it seems to be just this part of pop culture that you can't get away from. And even if you know nothing about it, you know everything about
it.
Right. So 50 Shades of Musical was, no pun intended, a bit of a broad subject, whereas Game of Thrones is you got to know your stuff. And some of the 50 Shades writers were like obsessed with Game of Thrones. And, you know, because of they come from the Baby Wants Candy world of creating musicals, it just came naturally to be like, you know what? We did 50 Shades of Musical. Let's do a Game of Thrones musical.
Right.
And it's totally making fun of it. And it's also, if you don't watch Game of Thrones, the whole framing of the show is that you there's a guy, Brad, that admits to his friends on the season premiere of the final season in the future, guys, I have actually never watched an episode of Game of Thrones. There's pandemonium and anarchy, and they're like, Brat, sit back. We're going to use everything we can in our little apartment to reenact all six seasons of Game of Thrones, and it's a musical.
Well, it's a, you have to do that because there's, I mean, as an HBO show, it's a wildly popular show, but there are some people like myself that aren't really into Game of Thrones and don't really know all the intricate details of it, so it's, it seems like a smart way to frame something to include other people.
That's right. And I wrote on 50 Shades musical, but when we realized like we should probably start focusing on Game of Thrones, I was like, I watch the show, but I'm not like passionate about Game of Thrones. So I kind of was on the periphery of that process, but it was helpful because I could ask questions like, why are you guys all crying right now about Jon Snow? Like, what happened, guys? What just went on? So, like, that was, like, it was fun to be a little bit on the outside of that process. And I think it was helpful for them because I'm the person in the audience that hasn't really paid attention or cared that much. And all of a sudden, they're like, no, we're going to make you care about these people that you have no idea about.
Yeah, and I think about Chicago being a real great place for musical parody over the years. I mean,
yeah.
I think about they did the Jedi, the musical at I.O. for a long time.
Yes.
And that got in trouble. Star Trek, they did some stuff.
And The Roof is on the Fiddler.
Yeah, right, right. T.J.
Shanhoff,
right.
Tel Rico.
You know, who's been in studio talking about some of that stuff. And but there really is this sort of musical parody lineage in the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people come from I.O., Second City, and places like Baby Wants Candy.
Right, that's right. And Baby Wants Candy is an improvised musical, so they never do the same musical twice. And when they get an opportunity to sit down and actually script a show, they definitely pull on everything they've learned from the various training centers and their own musical strengths. But it's definitely a totally different muscle in an improv community.
Yeah, right.
To start scripting a musical.
Is it tough? I mean, to do that as you wrote on 50 Shades, is it tough to be able to have that skill to make things up on the spot, especially with music in the background, which I find to be utterly impossible. What you guys do is brilliant magic. It's,
yeah,
black magic. But is it tough to make that transition to the written page?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that you build that strength in the most interesting way, and that is corporate comedy, because I think a lot of actors and improvisers, especially within Chicago, you make your living doing corporate comedy. So
right.
Second City and all these places get hired by like Abbott Labs to write the Abbott Labs Christmas show and make fun of Jeff, the VP that always says the dumbest things. And so you get to know these companies in a way you would never know, and you find out all the things that they laugh at internally. And then you kind of use those same skills to write a parody. Like, the audience that is obsessed with Game of Thrones acts like this guy. And
right,
so you kind
right.
of, like, that's kind of the basis of it.
Yeah, it gives you almost like a formula, too.
Yeah, because if the audience, I think in our parodies especially, if the audience can see themselves in the characters, that's all. They want to just be like, oh my God, that is so you, Justin. You are so on that stage right now.
Well, you guys at Baby Wants Candy have had such a run in Chicago. I mean, it is one of the more iconic improvised, I would just say, shows beyond it being a musical improvisation. Talk about that, because, you know, this is kind of the next step for Baby Wants Candy. Baby Wants Candy used to be Fridays and Saturday nights at I.O., and then
uh-huh.
it moved to the Apollo, and it was just, that was the gimmick. It was, we're going to play some music, and
yeah.
we're going to do a improvised musical. But this is the next step. Is it a logical step for you guys?
I think so. I mean, when I came on with Baby Wants Candy as kind of artistic director and producer, I always had this vision of being like a musical factory, which I don't mean to make it sound too corporate, but I was just like, you guys are churning out these songs that I have in my head all week, and like no one will ever hear them again.
Yeah, right.
What if we actually dedicated ourselves to like putting some of this on paper and recording and archiving this material, because it's really good. And we have a band, they're making up music every night of the show. So if you haven't seen a Baby Wants Candy show, they get a title of a musical that's never been performed before from the audience. And in that moment, the first title that they hear, they create a 60-minute improvised musical. And they've literally created about 3,000 musicals
yeah,
around
the
world.
Yeah, it's unreal. And it's hard to believe you know, in the city of Chicago that anyone hasn't seen at this point because it's run for so long in Chicago. But, you know, as we talk about the idea of making a transition from that kind of theater to a more the parody theater with 50 Shades and Game of Thrones, those are do you run into different challenges when you have to do that? Because it's a not only a scripted piece, we talked about that, but I mean, you are using brand names and licensing and stuff. I know that parody kind of, you know, skirts the law.
Yeah.
But how do you sort of navigate that world of being able to use the word Thrones in a title and things like that?
Let me just get my lawyer on speakerphone. Just hang on a sec. Well, I will say no problems yet with Thrones. And actually, parody is totally legal in the United States.
Right.
Fun fact, wasn't legal in the UK up until 2015.
Interesting.
Yeah. So some people, I won't name names, that may have written possibly 50 Shades of Grey, wasn't crazy about their work being parodied. And so we did definitely hear from her.
Really?
Yeah.
So they can register, you know, disdain for the project, but there's not much they can do past that.
In the UK, actually, it can do a little bit more than that.
Oh, really? So they can essentially say, this is, you can't touch this brand.
Well, that's right. But they can't touch it in the US. And actually, 50 Shades is in about 20 countries and 20 languages at this point, and they can't do anything about it. And as of 2015, it's okay in the UK. It was some old law from like the 20s that basically said you cannot parody in the UK, which is crazy when you think about all the comedy and all the parody that comes out of the UK. But it's actually, it was illegal.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay. So you guys, what I love about it is you're about to open the show at the Apollo tomorrow night.
Yes.
Starts July 21st, runs till
August 21st.
August 21st. You also at the same time are taking the same show to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, starts in just a week or week and a half here. Talk about that. Is that a lot of stress on the show? Do you have to rehearse two different shows with two different casts?
Yes. And in Edinburgh, we actually like to test shows there. And we did Thrones last summer there. And that's kind of where we workshop things and get them going.
Great.
Same with 50 Shades.
Yeah.
That's where we did one show of 50 Shades in Edinburgh the first time when we found out about that fun parody law. And then we brought it back later.
You learned something.
You learn something every day, Justin.
Right, right.
That's why I say go to Edinburgh. But the Edinburgh time slot is 1 hour. So it's 60 minutes. And at the Apollo, obviously we are doing a much longer show.
Right.
So, you don't have an intermission there, so you have to get everything really tight for that Edinburgh show. And we're going to try maybe a few things at the Apollo that we couldn't try in Edinburgh.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a veteran of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and I've gone and I've talked about it on the show that it's one of the most exciting kind of moments in anyone who does any sort of theater to be at a festival like that, because the town in Edinburgh, Scotland, just kind of turns into
it's
one big theater rehearsal.
I always say it's like a combination of like an election campaign and summer camp, but like times five.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the population of Edinburgh is multiplied times like seven for
That's
the month of August.
Yeah, and it's fun. I mean, where do you guys? I mean, Baby Wants Candy. When I went in, 1999, 2000, were the mainstays. You guys took some time off, but you're back since 2010. You were back in and with Thrones and other things. I mean, do audiences sort of they connect to you coming back and being a mainstay at that festival?
Well, yeah, they do. And I think that's because we feed them because the name Baby Wants Candy. First of all, it's the only place in the world that flyering works.
Right.
People are so overwhelmed with options for shows that they are like begging anyone to tell them what to see, because they all feel like they're missing out. And our flyers, we get an army of production team interns, and they flyer and give candy out all day long.
Yep.
So that's how you do it.
So
make sure candy's in the name of your show and then hand out candy.
It is true, because we played in a small theater. It's like maybe 75 seats. And what we would do with Schadenfreude is we would split the group. Half the group would go down to the Royal Mile and flyer.
Right.
And try to get everybody out. And the other half would go see other people's shows.
Uh-huh.
Which
I know that game.
And then you'd be like, hey, we saw your show. You should come see ours.
Hey, cast of 30. We loved Grey Gardens with 30 people.
It's funny because there's some people that I still keep in contact with through Facebook or whatever that I saw their show in Edinburgh. And they were cast from California or from New Zealand or something of that nature. And it was always fun to meet so many different people from so many places.
And we go to see a lot of American high school shows, and they always have big casts. One of our cast of Baby One's Candy was in an American high school show way back in the day. We didn't know this, but he always tells us a story of like his high school kind of ran out of budget sending everybody over there, and so they couldn't bring a set. And so they had to bring inflatable, they got like beach furniture, which I don't know where you get that in the UK.
Yeah, right.
So they were doing Anything Goes and they couldn't have any set. So it was all like a black vacuum and with inflatable furniture. So they made it Anything Goes in space.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
Let's see. That's right. Good. That's good. All right. So the show is on stage at the Apollo Theater in Lincoln Park. It's called Thrones, the Musical Parody. It is starting tomorrow night, June 21st, and running through August 14, you said, or 21. You can find it all online. Look up Thrones Musical Parody. I want to thank former Chicagoan Emily DeRizis, who's back for this.
Yeah.
Where are you at now, L.A.?
Los Angeles.
All right. Congrats.
Thanks.
Producer for Baby Wants Candy and a co-writer on her past show, 50 Shades. The musical parody. Thanks for coming in studio.
That was a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Good luck with the Fringe.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm telling you, man, go see Baby Wants Candy. I should have asked if this still, with all these shows going on, I think it's still on stage. If not, it'll be back. It's a great show here in Chicago. It's a mainstay. It's a legendary show. Musical improv. That started at I.O. and at one point migrated to the Apollo Theater. Great stuff. All right, coming up here on the download, we are going to shift gears and get into politics. The Republican National Convention is in day three. It's in form. We just saw Governor Scott Walker from the state of Wisconsin hit the stage. We're still waiting on Senator Marco Rubio and Senator Cruz. And, of course, tonight's headliner, Vice Presidential Candidate Mike Pence. What's the theme going to be? It's Make America First Again. I'm not sure when America was first, but we do realize we're one of the newer countries that's ever been out there. No, I kid. It's like, Make America First. Oh, all right. Okay. Well, China's been around for like thousands of years, but also, I'm interested because we had good conversations with Professor Lipson and Chris Roebling, who are both in studio tonight to serve as our panel to talk about what to expect and to react to the speech itself. But really, you know, as we talked about last night, this really went from Make America Work Again to Make America Bash Hillary Clinton some more. And it didn't stop because today there was more of that, and we'll see. Because at the beginning of the week when we did Touche with Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling, the talk was this was Mike Pence's job. Mike Pence's job as the vice presidential candidate, his job is to be the attack dog. He's supposed to take down the challenger so that when Donald Trump speaks on Thursday, he doesn't have to. That's usually how a political convention works. You'll see that was Joe Biden's role in 2008 and 2012. So we'll see. I mean, but the question is the incessant, I would say almost over the top Hillary bashing that we've seen up to this point, does it spoil what Mike Pence has to say in that regard? Does he need to still be the attack dog? Did they have to change the speech a little bit because it has hit that point where more and more media is coming out where they're like, enough is enough. We get it. You have to do more than just bash on the opponent. You have to tell us what you stand for. And if we're going to see if Mike Pence is going to shift gears and be able to do that. So we will talk with Chris Roebling and, of course, Charles Lipson and, of course, Andrea Darlis, WGN Radio from the Steve Cochran Show, is out and reporting on the convention tonight. She's going to join us right after the news. Tell us what's been going on. Give us an update on Governor Walker's speech. And give us a little bit more of an insight on what's been happening today. Day three of the Republican National Convention. How fun is that? And then, of course, Rokan with Anna DeVellantes is back tomorrow for the big final show before the speech with Donald Trump. And tomorrow night, we're going to air Donald Trump's speech, of course. We'll do the same thing we're doing tonight. So, some programming notes here on the download. No picnic tonight. Boo. Although, Martyr had it right. We should have done picnics for your political candidates. Maybe we still can. If we can get word to Mike Pence to keep it short, so we could do that. And also, that means tomorrow night, the segment, the regular Thursday night segment, Swap Meet, Greg Flamm, where we evaluate your useless Chicago memorabilia. And I say that in the fondest of terms, because I love it. That's my favorite segment. Is also postponed and will be back after the conventions the first week of August. So stay tuned for continuing coverage live from the WGN Convention Studios in Cleveland all this week.
Before we take a look at sports and baseball this afternoon at the Republican National Convention, speaking right now is Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
Thank you, and God bless each and every one of you. Heidi and I are so honored to join you here in Cleveland, where LeBron James just led an incredible comeback victory. And I am convinced America is going to come back too. I want to congratulate Donald Trump on winning the nomination last night. And like each of you, I want to see the principles that our party believes prevail in November. Conventions are times of excitement, but given the events of the last few weeks, I hope you'll allow me a moment to talk to you about what's really at stake. Just 2 weeks ago, a 9-year-old girl named Caroline was having a carefree Texas summer, swimming in the pool, playing with friends, doing all the things a happy child might do. Like most children, she relied upon the love that she received from her mom, Heidi, and her dad, a police sergeant named Michael Smith. That is, until he became one of the five police officers gunned down in Dallas. The day her father was murdered, Caroline gave him a hug and a kiss as he left for work. But as they parted, her dad asked her something he hadn't asked before. What if this is the last time you ever kiss or hug me? Later, as she thought of her fallen father and that last heartbreaking hug, Caroline broke down into tears. How could anything ever be okay again? Michael Smith was a former Army Ranger who spent 3 decades with the Dallas Police Department. I have no idea who he voted for in the last election or what he thought about this one. But his life was a testament to devotion. He protected the very protesters who mocked him because he loved his country and his fellow man. His work gave new meaning to that line from literature, "To die of love is to live by it." As I thought about what I wanted to say tonight, Michael Smith's story weighed on my heart. Maybe that's because his daughter, Caroline, is about the same age as my eldest daughter and happens to share the same name. Maybe it's because I saw a video of that dear, sweet child choking back sobs as she remembered her daddy's last question to her. Maybe it's because we live in a world where so many others have had their lives destroyed by evil in places like Orlando and Paris and Nice and Baton Rouge. Maybe it's because of the simple question itself. What if this, right now, is our last time? Our last moment to do something for our families and our country? Did we live up to the values we say we believe? Did we do all we really could? That's really what elections should be about. That's why you and millions like you devoted so much time and sacrifice to this campaign. We're fighting not for one particular candidate or one campaign, but because each of us wants to be able to tell our kids and grandkids, our own Carolines, that we did our best for their future and our country.
You're listening to Texas Senator Ted Cruz speaking at the Republican National Convention.
America is more than just a landmass between two oceans. America is an ideal, a simple yet powerful idea. Freedom matters. For much of human history, government power has been the unavoidable constant in life. Government decrees, and the people obey. But not here. We have no king or queen. We have no dictator. We, the people, constrain government. Our nation is exceptional because it was built on the five most beautiful and powerful words in the English language. I want to be free. Never has that message been more needed than today. We stand here tonight, a nation divided. Partisan rancor, anger, even hatred are tearing America apart. And citizens are furious, rightly furious, at a political establishment that cynically breaks its promises and that ignores the will of the people. We have to do better. We owe our fallen heroes more than that. Now, of course, Obama and Clinton will also tell you that they care about our children's future. And I want to believe them. But there is a profound difference in our two parties' vision for the future. Theirs is the party that thinks ISIS is a JV team, that responds to the death of Americans at Benghazi by asking, what difference does it make? And that thinks it's possible to make a deal with Iran, which celebrates as holidays Death to America Day and Death to Israel Day. My friends, this is madness. President Obama is a man who does everything backwards. He wants to close Guantanamo Bay and open up our borders. He exports jobs and imports terrorists. Enough is enough. And I am here to tell you there is a better vision for our future, a return to freedom. On education, your freedom to choose your child's education, even if you aren't as rich as Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. On health care, your freedom to choose your own doctor without Obamacare. On taxes, your freedom to provide for your family without the IRS beating down your door. The internet, keep it free from taxes, free from regulation, and don't give it away to Russia and China. Freedom means free speech, not politically correct safe spaces. Freedom means religious freedom, whether you are Christian or Jew, Muslim or atheist. Whether you are gay or straight, the Bill of Rights protects the rights of all of us to live according to our conscience. Freedom means the right to keep and bear arms and to protect your family.
Again, you're listening to Texas Senator Ted Cruz speaking at the Republican National Convention.
Freedom means that every human life is precious and must be protected. Freedom means Supreme Court justices who don't dictate policy, but instead follow the Constitution. And freedom means recognizing that our Constitution allows states to choose policies that reflect local values. Colorado might decide something different than Texas. New York, different than Iowa. That's the way it's supposed to be. Diversity. If not, what's the point of having states to begin with? Now, Hillary Clinton believes that government should make virtually every choice in your life. Education, health care, marriage, speech, all dictated out of Washington. But something powerful is happening. We've seen it in both parties. We've seen it in the United Kingdom's unprecedented Brexit vote to leave the European Union. Voters are overwhelmingly rejecting the political establishment and overwhelmingly rejecting big government. That is a profound victory, and it is one earned by each and every one of you. People are fed up with politicians who don't listen to them, fed up with a corrupt system that benefits the elites instead of working men and women. We deserve an immigration system that puts America first and, yes, builds a wall to keep America safe. A government that stops admitting ISIS terrorists as refugees. We deserve trade policies that put the interest of American farmers and manufacturing jobs over the global interests that are funding the lobbyists. And if we stand together and choose freedom, our future will be brighter. Freedom will bring back jobs and raise wages. Freedom will lift people out of dependency to the dignity of work. We can do this. 47 years ago to this day, America put the very first man on the moon. That was the power of freedom. Our party, the Republican Party, was founded to defeat slavery. Abraham Lincoln, the first Republican president, signed the Emancipation Proclamation. Together, we passed the Civil Rights Act, and together, we fought to eliminate Jim Crow laws. That's our collective legacy, although the media will never share it with you. Those were fights for freedom, and so is this. Sergeant Michael Smith stood up to protect our freedom. So do the soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines every day fighting radical Islamic terrorism. Did the family of Alton Sterley, who bravely called to end the violence. So did the families of those murdered at the Charleston Emanuel AME Church, who forgave that hateful, bigoted murderer. And so can we. We deserve leaders who stand for principle, who unite us all behind shared values, who cast aside anger for love. That is the standard we should expect from everybody. And to those listening, please don't stay home in November. if you love our country and love your children as much as I know that you do, stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution. Enthusiasm of the New York delegation. And I will tell you, it is love of freedom that has allowed millions to achieve their dreams. Like my mom, the first in her family to go to college, and my dad, who's here tonight, who fled prison and torture in Cuba, coming to Texas with just $100 sewn into his underwear. And it is love that I hope will bring comfort to a grieving 9-year-old girl in Dallas. And God willing, propel her to move forward and dream and soar and make her daddy proud. We must make the most of our moment to fight for freedom, to protect our God-given rights, even of those with whom we don't agree, so that when we are old and gray, and when our work is done, and we give those we love one final kiss goodbye, we will be able to say, freedom matters, and I was part of something beautiful. The case we have to make to the American people, the case each person in this room has to make to the American people, is to commit to each of them that we will defend freedom and be faithful to the Constitution. We will unite the party, we will unite the country by standing together for shared values, by standing for liberty. God bless each and every one of you, and God bless the United States of America.
So there you have it, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, Justin, amid chants of endorse Trump on the floor of the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Did not even utter Donald Trump's name one time.
Unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
There's Trump walking in.
And Trump is there, and this is, I mean, this that's a great piece of American political history right there, Senator Ted Cruz. A great speech, and we'll talk about that speech with Chris Roebling and Charles Lipson, who are in studio with us now, listening intently to the speech. But man, oh man, goes out of his way to not say the words, Donald Trump. Chris? Well,
he defied the chanting of the New York delegation that was calling on him about 4 or 5 minutes before his wrap up to say, endorse Trump, endorse Trump, endorse Trump. And he said, I appreciate the enthusiasm of the New York delegation. I'm absolutely shocked.
I was shocked too. In fact, Chris and I were talking during the red meat portion of this, when he was just nailing every one of the red meat Republican positions, and said, this has to conclude with an endorsement. And we looked back at Ronald Reagan in 1964, but especially in 1976, when he had fought against an incumbent, President Ford, and then at the convention got up and made a terrific speech endorsing Ford. That's what we thought would happen. It did not. That's big news.
Well, we will consider. I mean, we're going to have the news break here, and okay. we'll get to Rob. We'll get the news stuff. But, I mean, this is – I mean, otherwise, and we'll talk about it after the news, just a tremendous speech for Ted Cruz, speaking to the conservatives in this country, getting to all the sort of the talking points and the issues at the heart of this campaign, not really uttering Hillary Clinton's name, staying away from that, the negative. It was a really good speech, but overshadowed by what many will consider to be just petty politics.
Well, I don't know about petty. I mean, Trump spent 4 or 5 months calling him lying, Ted.
Yeah, that's what they always do.
It's tough to get over that stuff, obviously. But I want to say a couple of quick things. Number one, this puts Mike Pence right on a hot seat because he's got to come out after this.
I think Pence will endorse Trump.
I think that one
just
we
call
know.
Me crazy.
We know for sure about that. But number two, You've got to be amazed that the Trump campaign allowed this guy to get up there without sealing that deal.
It's you know what it is? It's that energy, that feel of what we want from political conventions. We just got it.
Let me just tell you, it is really hard to win the presidency unless you win 90% of the votes in your own party. And Ted Cruz, Donald Trump would love to kick him between the legs, but he's got to think really hard about what he's going to do, because there are a lot of people who they may or may not like Ted Cruz personally, but they agree with that speech.
That's Professor Charles Lipson, Chris Roebling also in studio. We'll take a break and we'll get to Rob Martyr's news. We're covering the Republican National Convention and we're awaiting the speech from Vice Presidential candidate Mike Pence. Stay with us here on WGN Radio. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We are covering the Republican National Convention. Wow, what a speech from Ted Cruz, a senator from Texas, who lit up the floor of the Republican National Convention by not endorsing Donald Trump. He had the opportunity by the end of that otherwise pretty great conservative speech. The boos started to come on. The chanting started to overpower. And he unbelievably did not endorse Donald Trump. Didn't say Donald Trump's name. Chris Roebling, well, Charles Lipson in studio.
Hold on. He said Donald Trump's name when he congratulated him for winning the nomination. And he did that at the top.
Right.
And I thought for a second he might follow that up with an endorsement right there to just get it out of the way and get onto his meat. But that's not what happened.
Well, there are two ways to think about this. One is, what is Ted Cruz doing about his own future? Chris has a lot more friends who are tweeting in about this, and I would say they are extremely critical.
Well,
and
Chris, let's go to that. I mean, what are you seeing? I mean,
Cruz is a big disappointment. What happened? Here's another one. Great speech until he did not endorse Trump. This is a very profound one. He had his Reagan moment and he blew it.
That's what we were talking about before. Reagan lost and made his future by endorsing the man he lost to.
Right.
Yeah. Helene, a friend of mine, a great speech about freedom. Yes. But he had a huge opportunity to endorse and unite and he blew it. He proved he's not a team player. He's a sore loser. And I want to tell you, that's not a good moniker on the Republican side. I think that the Democrats are a lot more into folks going their own way, and they're a lot more forgiving. Republicans are not. They remember this stuff a long time, and they are not. You know, this is something that is going to be chalked up right there with Ted Cruz.
And he's not the only sore loser, right? There is Jeb Bush, who's not at the convention. There's Kasich, who's not at the convention. And we could go down the list.
Even the Mark Kirks and so, even the
and what does this mean? What does this mean? It means that the 90%+ that you need to get of the vote in your own party to be to have a really solid shot at winning in normal years, and Lord knows this isn't a normal year, but it's going to be very hard for Trump to get there. This will be hard on, on Cruz for the reasons that Chris stated. But the main game here is the presidency of the United States. And the issue here is how much does this hurt Donald Trump that Cruz did not endorse?
Charles Lipson, Chris Roebling in studio with us, and coming from Cleveland, who's at the Quicken Loan Arena, is Andrea Darlis from WGN Radio. She's covering the convention for all of us here. Andrea, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just actually stepped outside of the Quicken Loan Center after Ted Cruz spoke. Eric Plump is speaking right now. It got so loud in that concourse area. I stepped outside to talk to you guys, and I think it's louder actually out here on the street. I'm just, I'm sure you've heard about the perimeter and the security here. It's absolutely crazy. There's so much security. There's so many people out. I'm kind of in an area across the street that I guess I would kind of compare it to our Rush Street.
Okay. All right.
In Chicago. People are out. They have monitors set up everywhere so we can still hear the speeches and watch everything. People are stopping to watch. There's a couple of protests tonight. But when I say that protest, I say that very loosely. I think there was maybe 12 people, and they were protesting. I didn't even know what they were protesting, quite honestly. A couple actually stopped to take a picture with the police, which I thought was kind of nice in light of everything that's been going on.
Andrea, what happened when Ted Cruz did not endorse Trump?
What was it like in the hall?
It was, I'll be honest with you. When I was on the floor earlier this evening, it was a celebratory, happy, fun mood. But, as was the case last night, this really just kind of took a Hillary bashing tone. And that kind of set the stage. Everybody who spoke before Ted Cruz just continued with the Hillary bashing. And, I know it's the GOP convention. The same thing's going to happen next week in Philadelphia, too. But, this is very strange, a very strange convention because you are hearing boos. I did hear boos a couple here and there when Ted Cruz votes approached and then when he finished as well. But that happened last night with Mitch McConnell, too. So, I guess it's the equal opportunity booing going on.
Well, I've got somebody has posted a tweet from the Illinois delegation saying one of the delegates out there from Illinois, Cruz is a disgrace. He should go back to Texas. I want to credit TTW with that because otherwise I wouldn't know.
By the same token, you have Mark Kirk, who didn't go to the convention at all because he's so concerned that an endorsement would jeopardize his own election.
Do you find people, Andrea, do you find people there concerned about unity? Are people concerned about Trump getting his 90% out of the GOP base?
No, I think he's going to get it. I mean, the majority of the mood of the people that I spoke to, guys, was unity. I have to say, you're going to get the naysayers and you're going to get the people who are anti-Trump or not happy with Trump. But overall, the whole point and the whole message of the community, and I did talk with a couple members of the Illinois delegation as well, they were all, they're to a point now, the convention's almost half over. They knew Trump was going to make an appearance tonight, which he is inside of the Q Center. He's listening to Eric speak right now. They say he's going to take the stage, but I don't think he's going to say anything. So we might just give Eric a hug or maybe introduce Mike Pence. I'm not quite sure at this point what he's going to do. But honestly, the mood overall is unity. You get a couple of people with the attitude of, oh, well, yeah, he's our nominee, shrug, shrug, but it is what it is right now. And they're still preaching unity at this point, too.
Yeah, and it's interesting because that's I guess, what makes Ted Cruz so specific, because he seems to have gone out of step and with a great speech about freedom at the same time, by not endorsing Donald Trump or even making Donald Trump a focal point for his speech, he almost preaches a sort of division.
Andrea, this is Charles Lipson. Let me ask you a question that's quite specific. It seems like what Trump wants to do in terms of winning is not the typical sort of purple state, let's go after Virginia, let's go after Colorado. Obviously, you have to win Ohio and Florida. But there's talk about a Rust Belt strategy, not including Illinois. What have you talked to these other Midwestern delegations? What are they saying? What are they saying their chances are in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania?
That there, you mean, what? I'm not quite sure I understand the question. Are you asking if they're going to not
do they? No. I'm sure they'll back. My question is, do they think they have a genuine chance at winning those states?
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I mean, I spent a lot of time talking with people, but everybody I talked to, I was on the floor today. I was talking to the Illinois delegation. I was talking to the New Jersey delegation. Talked to some folks from Wisconsin. You know, again, as I said before, they're really preaching unity and getting behind their nominee, whether they're happy about it or not. I don't think there's going to be any sort of an uprising.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that, by the way, that Scott Walker's speech was an excellent speech, and I did too. I'm glad to hear that. Why don't you say something about how the crowd reacted?
Scott Walker got a rousing rendition. They were thrilled with him. He did a whole portion. He stopped to thank the veterans, talked about, supporting the troops. There was a big rallying cry for that as well. I think he was very well received, Scott Walker. I enjoyed his speech.
And that America deserves better was a good line coming across and getting the crowd repeating it and so forth, I thought.
No, I agree.
Andre Darlis, WGN Radio, is covering the convention for us at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Andre, get in there. Get ready for Mike Pence.
All right, I'm going
sure it's
going
to be good. We'll check in with you later in the show. Andre, thanks. It's good to talk to you. Take care. Andre Darlis live at the Republican National Convention.
Well, I just got to tell you, I mean, you know, you get to a convention this year of unusual activities, unusual events. I mean, we've got the first woman candidate of a major party on the one hand, and we've got the first businessman with no official experience since Herbert Hoover on the other side. So it's a strange year. And now this, I mean, Reagan was furious about losing to Ford, and he was terribly disappointed about losing to Ford. He really thought he was going to be able to get that. And he wanted desperately to run against Jimmy Carter.
And there was an ideological division.
There was a huge ideological division, and it was the conservatives who wanted to return government to the people versus the establishment, which was Gerry Ford coming right out of Nixon and all of the Washington power brokers. And Reagan swallowed all of that. Now, Ford had not treated Reagan the way that Trump has treated Cruz.
Right.
Okay. But that's not going to be remembered by anybody. And Reagan went on. I believe that Reagan did good service to Ford in the fall. Others will take the position that Reagan sat on his hands and that he didn't campaign as much as he could have. So, but either way you come out on that, I'm just amazed that Cruz would make such a big impression with this speech and then leave the issue of the endorsement.
Chris Roebling, Charles Lipson in studio. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll have more coverage of the Republican National Convention as we get ready for vice presidential candidate Mike Pence. Stay with us. All right. Welcome back to the download here. Donald Trump, the Illinois delegation, the 2016 Republican National Convention. Watch Mark Sapelson, WGN TV News, bring you live coverage from Cleveland all this week. It's the download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman.
Newt Gingrich is pointing out a paragraph in the Ted Cruz speech attempting to ameliorate
really
the lack of endorsement.
Interesting.
Now,
let's see if we can get it up
so
there.
It obvious, and I'm sure that certainly was not planned. That certainly is not on the teleprompter.
So why,
that is Newt going off script
to replace
that divot.
Wow. How about that? We have that. We can get to the speech, but give us a second to get that technically going here. But I mean, as you see, I mean, obviously this is planned. I mean, Calista Gingrich introduces Newt Gingrich. They're not doing that just to.
No. Newt has added that to his own speech.
He has.
Newt also sounded a tone of unity because he recited all of the candidates from the primary who had actually accepted Trump's invitation to come to Cleveland and to speak. So like Governor Walker, Senator Rubio.
Right.
To people who are just tuning in, it's really important to understand this is a historic night. Nothing new or unexpected ever happens at conventions. And we just saw something.
And we're talking about, if you are just tuning in, Ted Cruz took the stage in a wonderful speech. I mean, a conservative speech. Both
Red
Charles
meat.
And Chris
Red
loved
meat.
It. I mean, it was pretty amazing to be in the room with two Republicans clapping and cheering for the speech. But it ended in a way that everyone felt he was going to turn it back to, and that's why we need Donald Trump. That's why we need the nominee. And as he got closer to the end of the speech, the boos started to come out. The delegation
people
from
yelling,
New York
endorse
saying, endorse
Donald
Trump, endorse
yeah.
Trump. And he refused to do it, and he left the stage without endorsing or even saying Donald Trump in the beginning of his speech.
Yeah, I mean, it is truly amazing, and it puts Cruz in the position of raising the unity question, which is one of the very few questions at this moment that implicates the viability and the winnability of the Trump campaign. Okay, so this is, I mean, on Monday night we had, I was here Monday night,
yeah, right.
And we had Melania, and she gave a nice talk, and then it came out 3 a.m. that two big passages came from Michelle Obama.
Right, right.
And that created this controversy, and they still haven't really quelled that controversy. And now, before that's over, before Pence speaks, they've got this Cruz non-endorsement.
Does it matter, Charles? And I'll ask you this because, you know, there was so the speech that Ted Cruz gave was about freedom. And he talked about all the different issues that are important to conservative Republicans, everything from tax. He mentioned religious freedom. He talked about free speech. He talked about the Second Amendment. He went down the list to every sort of, like you say, red meat thing. When he doesn't go for Donald Trump and there's that division, is he essentially saying that people that are for these issues, Donald Trump's not your candidate?
He didn't quite say that, but he implied it. He said, vote your conscience. What he was really saying is, I'm your candidate, and I don't know if Donald Trump is. And what we don't know, first of all, the one thing we know for sure is this is the story until Trump himself speaks. This story will dominate everything. What we don't know is the backstory. What we don't know is whether Trump and Cruz privately met, and Cruz asked for something, which could have been ideological, could have been an apology about his wife and father, could have been a lot of things.
Right, right, right.
We don't know that, but I'll tell you, the Washington Post and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal have reporters right now trying to figure out what led to this giant train wreck.
Now, as a consultant, as an analyst, as someone who's been involved in Republican politics, it's just not good. It's not good that Ted Cruz did this on the national stage when all of America's watching.
Well, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I mean, there's got to be some kind of accountability here at some point. Paul Manafort is supposedly the master of the convention, and he himself prolonged the Melania thing by not owning up to it the morning of, by trying to deny the existence.
Yeah,
of
they
the
needed
issue.
To take a morning after pill there.
They really screwed that up. And now this, and it's not as though you can deny Cruz a place at the convention because he's got 550 delegates on that floor. But if he was going to pull this kind of stunt, if you didn't have an endorsement agreement with the guy, if you weren't clearing his copy, because at conventions, usually the copy gets cleared through the candidate's operation.
That's what I can't understand.
Then
I mean,
put him on Monday at, you know, make him Monday at 7 o'clock at night.
Or four o'clock in the afternoon, something. I mean, something. Don't put him at right before your vice presidential candidate. that all of America is tuning in to watch.
Yeah, I just think this is huge news, and it will dominate. Yeah. And that's also unfortunate for the Republicans. So they've spent much of the convention cleaning up after mistakes, which were unforced errors. The one thing you can predict is that people are going to say, this shows when you haven't run a national campaign before, you're just not experienced at it. But let me just tell you, that's also Trump's strength.
Yeah.
If people thought that experienced insiders were doing a great job at running this country, Donald Trump wouldn't have gotten out of the starter's gate.
That's Charles Lipson. Chris Roebling's also in studio. We'll take a quick break. We'll get to an update with Rob Martier in the news. And, of course, we expect to hear from Vice Presidential candidate Mike Pence tonight, and we'll give you that speech. That's the RNC coverage here live on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Lots of great stuff coming in from our texters and phone on the phone from our listeners at WGN Radio about tonight's festivities at the Republican National Convention. Here's the download. We're talking about the RNC with Chris Roebling and Charles Lipson in studio with us as we get ready for what was supposed to be the main event, vice presidential candidate Mike Pence, who's up next speaking at the Republican National Convention. How does his speech change? Obviously, the words aren't going to change, but what can he do to sort of take back the momentum that Ted Cruz kind of stole?
If I were Paul Manafort and the people working backstage with Pence, what I would say is you want to drop in a paragraph in which you don't mention Cruz at all, but you mention some of the values and say, we've heard talk of X, Y, and Z, liberty and Second Amendment values, and down the list. And you say, and I want you to know, there's one person who's going to back them, and there's one person who's going to oppose them. And if you think that this is not a race between these two people, you are wrong. That's what he should come out and try to say.
They're listening right now at 7:20, and they're like, got to write this down.
I got to tell you something.
I'm stealing this.
They may have told Newt to take care of this, and maybe it's Newt who took care of it for Pence. And I think we got to understand. Newt got out there, and he said, look, I want to draw your attention to a paragraph in Ted Cruz's speech. And he said, you go out there and support the people who support freedom, liberty, and the American way. And ladies and gentlemen, there is one guy running for president this year who is going to do all of that, and that is Donald Trump. And the crowd, you know, cheered that along. And maybe from the standpoint of Manafort, who's got some pretty big egg on his face right now, that was enough.
He's got a whole omelet, man.
Well, let me ask you. Donald Trump, you know, there's thoughts of Donald Trump having some sort of role here to either introduce or come on after. Is he at all possibly going to take this on himself?
No.
Is Donald Trump disciplined enough to leave it alone?
Well, he absolutely... He absolutely is not going to mention it. It's not going to be at Trump's level.
Right.
Tonight, you may hear sources close to Donald Trump say that a man with bouffant hairdo is furious. You know. I think that this is a case where Trump really needs discipline because the worst thing that could happen from the Trump side, I'm just speaking analytically, is to make this a division with the man, not just the man who came in second, but all the people who were backing him.
Yeah, the delegates
and
the voters.
That's what's at
stake. Right. Well, I mean, let me ask both of you. I mean, both of you are Republican. Do you feel that Donald Trump has come around since winning the primary to represent the conservative values and ideals that Ted Cruz eloquently lined up when he talked about freedom in his speech?
Well, I'm conservative on fiscal and foreign policy issues and very liberal on social issues. I rather more identify as a Republican than a Democrat, but I'm not in any sense a party line kind of person.
That's why
I'm really not the person to ask on this. I haven't approached the election in a partisan way. I really, in a lot of ways, I feel like Mikey in that cereal commercial who used to say he hates everything.
Right.
And I must say, in this case, in this election, I not only didn't like the two people who were nominated, I didn't like the two people on each side who came in second.
Mike Pence is taking the stage.
All right, so here we go.
Well, with that introduction to Mike Pence.
Mikey likes it. So Governor Mike Pence is taking the stage, introduced by Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. Let's go ahead and go to – right. Well, you know, maybe we can bring it up. He's doing his little his applause and stuff like that.
Well, then let me just quickly say, I think Pence is a very big expression of Trump addressing the base of the Republican Party.
Right.
And the other big expression that we saw was his announcement about folks to put on the United States Supreme Court.
All right.
That's what's important, and that's what
Ted Cruz is going to be on the court.
Let's do it. Governor Mike Pence, here we go.
Here and gone. I accept your nomination to run and serve as Vice President of the United States of America. And let me thank Speaker Paul Ryan for that gracious welcome. Paul, you're a true friend and a great American leader. But Paul knows me well, and he knows the introduction I prefer is just a little bit shorter. I'm a Christian, a conservative, and a Republican, in that order. You know, I'm new to this campaign, and honestly, I never thought I'd be standing here. I thought I'd be spending this evening with all my friends from the great state of Indiana. Yet there I was, a few days ago in New York City, with the man who won 37 states, who faced 16 talented opponents and outlasted every one of them, and along the way brought millions of new voters into the Republican Party. You know, he's a man known for a large personality, a colorful style, and lots of charisma. And so I guess he was just looking for some balance on the ticket. Well, for those of you who don't know me, which is most of you, I grew up on the front row of the American dream. My grandfather immigrated to this country. I was raised in a small town in southern Indiana in a big family with a cornfield in the backyard. Although we weren't really a political family, the heroes of my youth were President John F. Kennedy and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. When I was young, I watched my mom and dad build everything that matters, a family, a business, and a good name. I was raised to believe in hard work, in faith, and family. My dad, Ed Pence, was a combat veteran in Korea. Dad ran gas stations in our small town, and he was a great father. If Dad were with us today, I'd have a feeling he'd enjoy this moment and probably be pretty surprised. But it's such a joy for me to tell you that my mother is here. Would you join me in welcoming the light of my life, my mom, Nancy? You know, growing up, I actually started in politics in the other party until I heard the voice on the ideals of the 40th president, and I signed on for the Reagan Revolution. But the best thing that ever happened to me, even counting tonight, is that 31 years ago, I married the girl of my dreams, a school teacher, an artist. She is everything to me. Would you welcome my wonderful wife, Karen Pence? And regardless of any title I'll ever hold, the most important job I'll ever have is spelled D-A-D. Karen and I are blessed. Karen and I are blessed to be the parents of the three greatest kids in the world. A writer named Charlotte, a college student named Audrey, and a second lieutenant in the United States Marine Corps, Michael J. Pence. I'm so proud of you guys. Now, if you know anything about Hoosiers, you know we love to suit up and compete. We play to win. That's why I joined this campaign in a heartbeat. You have nominated a man for president who never quits, who never backs down, a fighter, a winner. Until now, he's had to do it all by himself against all odds. But this week, with this united party, he's got backup. And on November 8th, I know we will elect Donald Trump to be the 45th president of the United States of America. Now, we'll win because we're running on the issues facing this country and because we're leveling with the American people about the stakes and the choice. You know, the American people are tired of being told. They're tired of being told that this is as good as it gets. They're tired of hearing politicians in both parties tell us that we'll get to that tomorrow while we pile a mountain range of debt on our children and our grandchildren. And as Ronald Reagan used to say, they're tired of being told that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives better for us than we can plan them for ourselves. In the end, this election comes down to just two names on the ballot, so let's resolve here and now that Hillary Clinton will never become president of the United States of America. Now, Hillary Clinton essentially offers a third Obama term, and the role is perfect for her. She championed Obamacare because years earlier she had all but invented it. The national debt has nearly doubled in these 8 years, and her only answer is to keep borrowing and spending. And like the president, she thinks the path to a growing economy is more taxes, more regulation, and more government. Now, they tell us this economy is the best that we can do. It's nowhere near the best that we can do. It's just the best that they can do. And let me tell you, I know firsthand, it doesn't have to be like this. In my home state of Indiana, we prove every day that you can build a growing economy on balanced budgets, low taxes, even while making record investments in education and roads and health care. You know, Indiana is a state that works because conservative principles work every time you put them into practice. Today, while the nation suffers under the weight of $19 trillion in a national debt, we in Indiana have a $2 billion surplus, the highest credit rating in the nation, even though we've cut taxes every year since I became governor 4 years ago. We have fewer state employees than when I took office. And businesses large and small have created nearly 150,000 new jobs, and there's more Hoosiers going to work than ever before. That's what you can do with common sense Republican leadership, and that's exactly what the no-nonsense leadership of Donald Trump will bring to the White House. You know, Donald Trump gets it. He's the genuine article. He's a doer in a game usually reserved for talkers. And when Donald Trump does his talking, he He doesn't tiptoe around the 1,000 new rules of political correctness. He's his own man, distinctly American. And where else would an independent spirit like his find a following than in the land of the free and the home of the brave? The funny thing is, you know, the funny thing is, the party in power seems helpless to figure out our nominee. The media has the same problem. They all keep telling each other that the usual methods will work against him. They keep thinking they've done him in, only to wake up the next morning and find that Donald Trump is still standing and running stronger than ever before. The man just doesn't quit. He's tough. He perseveres. He's gone about as far as you can go in business, but he's never turned his back on the working men and women who make this country grow. And Donald Trump will never turn his back on those who serve and protect us at home and abroad. You know, it's been a heartbreaking time for the women and men in our law enforcement community. And in this time of great testing for them, let's let them know, here and now, all across this country, we will always stand with those who stand on the thin blue line of law enforcement in America. You know, while Donald Trump was taking my measure as a possible running mate, I did some observing myself. I've seen the way he deals with people who work for him at every level. And I've seen the way they feel about working for him. Now, I'll grant you he can be a little rough with politicians on the stage, and I'll bet we see that again. But I've seen this good man up close, his utter lack of pretense, his respect for the people who work for him, and his devotion to his family. And if you still doubt what I'm saying, remember, as we say back home, you can't fake good kids. How about his amazing children? Aren't they something? These are the true measures of our nominee, chosen by the voters as the right man for these times. This is the outsider, my running mate, who turned a long shot campaign into a movement. Now, over in the other party, you know, if the idea was to present the exact opposite of a political outsider, the exact opposite of an uncalculating truth teller, then on that score, you got to hand it to the Democratic establishment. They outdid themselves this time. I mean, at the very moment when America is crying out for something new and different, The other party has answered with a stale agenda and the most predictable of names. People in both parties are restless for change, ready to break free of old patterns in Washington. And Democrats are about to anoint someone who represents everything this country is tired of. You know, Hillary Clinton wants a better title, and I would too if I was already America's Secretary of the Status Quo. You know, the choice couldn't be more clear. Americans can elect someone who literally personifies the failed establishment in Washington, D.C., or we can choose a leader who will fight every day to make America great again. It's change versus status quo. And my fellow Republicans, when Donald Trump becomes president of the United States of America, the change will be huge. For years, we've had fundamental problems in America that get talked to death in Washington, D.C., but they never get solved, and they even get worse. We've seen entire stretches of our country written off by bad economic policies in ways that are deeply unfair to American workers. We've seen relentless mandates from the executive branch. It seems like no aspect of our lives is too small for the present administration to supervise, and no provision of the Constitution is too large for them to ignore. Meanwhile, we've seen borders that go unrespected, a military that's been diminished, and promise after ringing promise to our veterans promptly forgotten. Then Donald Trump came along and started saying what practically everybody was thinking anyway, that our leaders need to be stronger. Under Donald Trump, our deals will be smarter. Our soldiers will have what they need, and our veterans will have what they earned. We will secure our borders, protect our nation. In all this, we will be more serious, and when we do, this nation will start winning again. You know, that's the message that men and women in both parties have been longing to hear. But none of us should think for one second that this will be easy. The outcome of this election depends on us and how we contend with an incredible onslaught that's coming our way. You know, this won't be America's first glimpse of the Clinton machine in action, as Bernie Sanders can tell you. And this time around, she'll have the press doing half her work for her. The good news is it won't be nearly enough. Not against a candidate who's captured the attention of the country the way Donald Trump has. On issue by issue, he and I will take our case to the voters, pointing out the failures of the Obama-Clinton agenda and showing a better way. We will win the hearts and minds of the American people with an agenda for a stronger and more prosperous America. Now, the establishment in Washington, D.C. thinks it's only a narrow range of voters who are giving Donald Trump a serious look. But I can tell you firsthand, there's a lot of Americans out there who feel like Democrat politicians have taken them for granted. It's union members who don't want a president who promises to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business. Those miners want an American energy policy, and they know that Donald Trump digs coal. It's African Americans who remember generations of hollow promises about safe streets and better schools, and they know Donald Trump will fight for equal opportunity, and he loves educational choice. And it's Hispanic Americans who respect the law, want jobs and opportunities for their families, who know that Donald Trump will uphold the law and get this economy moving for every American. You know, the party of Lincoln was founded on equality of opportunity. And during these difficult days, it will be our party and our agenda that opens the doors for every American to succeed and prosper in this land. You know, in so many ways, the Democratic Party has abandoned those it used to protect. Maybe they become too entrenched in power, so comfortable at times that they lose patience with the normal legislative process. It's so much simpler to impose their values by executive order or court action. And make no mistake about it, Hillary Clinton has some big ideas along those lines, too. As this election approaches, every American should know that while we're filling the presidency for the next 4 years, this election will define the Supreme Court for the next 40. We all better think very carefully about what this means for our Constitution and limited government. Elect Hillary Clinton, and you better get used to being subject to unelected judges using unaccountable power to take unconstitutional actions. So let me say, for the sake of the rule of law, for the sake of the sanctity of life, for the sake of our Second Amendment, and for the sake of all our other God-given liberties, we must ensure that the next president appointing justices to the Supreme Court is Donald Trump. And Hillary Clinton's record on foreign affairs gets even worse. You know, it was Hillary Clinton who helped undo all the gains of the troop surge, a staggering failure of judgment that set ISIS on the loose. It was Hillary Clinton who instigated the president's disastrous agreement with the radical mullahs in Iran. And it was Hillary Clinton who left Americans in harm's way in Benghazi, and after four Americans fell, said, "What difference at this point does it make?" As the proud father of a United States Marine, let me say from my heart, anyone who said that, anyone who did that, should be disqualified from ever serving as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of the United States of America. Seven and a half years of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton's policies have weakened America's place in the world.
terrorist attacks at home and abroad, grim and heartbreaking scenes from France just a few short days ago, and the attempted coup in Turkey all attest to a world spinning apart. History teaches us that weakness arouses evil. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's foreign policy of leading from behind, moving red lines, feigning resets with Russia, and the rise, rule, and reign of ISIS are a testament to this truth of history. We cannot have four more years apologizing to our enemies and abandoning our friends. America needs to be strong for the world to be safe, and on the world stage, Donald Trump will lead from strength. Donald Trump will rebuild our military and stand with our allies. Donald Trump will confront radical Islamic terrorism at its source and destroy the enemies of our freedom. And if the world knows nothing else, it will know this: America stands with Israel. You know, if you looked at the calendar this morning, you might have noticed. The presidency of Barack Obama ends exactly 6 months from today. And this much is certain of the Obama years. They're not ending well. There seems to be so many things that divide us, so few great purposes that unite us as they once did. And it's at moments like this, moments when politics fail, that I believe we do well to remember that what unites us far exceeds anything that sets us apart in America. That we are, as we have always been, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Should I have the awesome privilege to serve as your vice president, I promise to keep faith with that conviction, to pray daily for a wise and discerning heart, for who is able to govern this great people of yours without it? My fellow Americans, I believe we have come to another rendezvous with destiny. And I have faith. Faith in the boundless capacity of the American people, and faith that God can still heal our land. But we have a choice to make. This is another time for choosing. If you want a president who will protect this nation, confront radical Islamic terrorism, and rid the world of ISIS. If you want a president who will restore law and order to this country and give law enforcement the support and resources they deserve, if you want a president who will cut taxes, grow our economy, and squeeze every nickel out of the federal bureaucracy, if you want a president who will build strong borders and enforce our laws, and if you want a president who will upend the status quo in Washington, D.C., and appoint justices to the Supreme Court who will uphold the Constitution, we have but one choice, and that man is ready. This team is ready. Our party is ready. And when we elect Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States, together, we will make America great again. Thank you. And God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
So there you have it, Indiana Governor Mike Pence, Donald Trump's running mate, wrapping things up at the Republican National Convention, Justin.
All right. Thanks, Rob. And we'll pay close attention, too, because you want to see what Donald Trump does, as he will inevitably take the stage, I would assume, to do the handshake and the hug and the wave and all that kind of stuff before it's his turn to do it tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Ted Cruz won't be part of that group.
Charles Lipson in studio, Chris Roebling. Let's start with you, Charles. What did you think of that speech?
I thought it was a pretty straightforward laundry list, conservative kind of things. Dr. Samuel Johnson once said of Milton's Paradise Lost, none would have wished it longer. And that's kind of what I felt.
Here comes Donald Trump to the stage. He's doing the handshake business. He's off the mic, so that's good. He wants the mic so bad. He gets these, I want it, but he's not going to. It looks like he's going to follow tradition and shake some hands and be ready for tomorrow. Chris, what'd you think of the speech?
I think that you actually had a tremendous compilation of speeches tonight, and I think that Mike Pence gave probably the single most important conservative endorsement of Donald Trump of the entire campaign. I mean, Pence is up there as a link to the base of the party. And I think what you heard from Pence is every bit a Republican convention standard speech. But I think that he delivered it with some skill. And I think it was very well done. I think that he is a practiced. He's been a
politician for a long time now,
and he knows what he's doing right up there.
Right. There were no unforced errors. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, at this point, you got to say that's a win for the Republican
and I think
National
also
Convention.
He didn't mention Ted Cruz. He's out there with the family now, and he didn't mention Cruz. And I think that's because actually Gingrich took care of Gingrich replaced the Cruz divot. But I still think the big news tonight is Cruz not endorsing
Trump.
No,
there's a giant sinkhole in the parking lot, and that sinkhole is Ted Cruz.
Charles Lipson, Chris Roebling in studio. We'll continue the conversation and wrap up. Really, we're going to talk with Congressman Hultgren from the Illinois delegation. Also, check back in with Andrea Darlis. We've got much more. We'll continue talking and wrapping up and reacting to the Republican National Convention. Day 3, let's take a break. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you tonight till 11 o'clock when Patty Vasquez comes in, takes over in studio with me, Professor Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, Chris Roebling as well. We're reacting and analyzing what we saw tonight at the Republican National Convention. Day 3, Make America First Again. All right, so why don't we go right to the phones? Congressman Randy Hultgren joins us now. He's from the Illinois delegation. He, of course, represents the 14th District. Congressman Hultgren, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. Congressman Hultgren, you there?
Hear me?
All right, there
Hello?
We go. I got you. Okay.
Sorry about that. Okay.
Thanks for being here. Tell us your reaction tonight to Governor Pence's speech.
Well, I thought it was a great speech. Very strong, very clear. Just a good focus on honesty, on the importance of this election, certainly for our security, but also for the importance of the Supreme Court, how this election, you know, clearly is going to impact the next 4 years, but the Supreme Court justices that are selected are going to impact the next 40 years. And just believe, again, Trump Pence is a really strong ticket. I knew Governor Pence. He and I served for a couple of years together out in Washington, and he was one of my mentors early on, and just an incredible man of character, man of faith, family man. You could hear that so clearly in his message tonight as well, that he loves this country and wants it to be a strong country for his kids and his grandkids as well.
Hi, Congressman. It's Chris Roebling. What about...
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good, thanks. And you? And I want to know what you think about Ted Cruz not endorsing Donald Trump.
You know, it doesn't totally surprise me with Ted. I like Ted. You know, I like what he stands for. I don't always like the strategy that he has. I just don't always know that it moves the ball forward. But you know what? Each of us have to decide to do what we want to do. We'll see if it has long-term ramifications for him. You know, I think to me, what I take out of all of this is it's pretty cool, I think, that Trump invited people that weren't going to come out and endorse him. But I thought Newt Gingrich had kind of a nice spin on it of saying, hey, you know, Cruz didn't endorse, but he said, hey, vote for, get out and vote. You have no excuse not to vote, which I absolutely agree with. And he said, vote for the one who's going to support the Constitution, which is Trump Pence. So, you know, I think he kind of completed the circle there. But you know what? It doesn't surprise me completely with how Senator Cruz has handled things in the past and kind of certain things in the Senate. But again, each person has to make up their own decision of what they're going to do.
This is Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. Sure. There's a step short of endorsement. You can there are people who say, I'm going to vote for, but don't actually make a formal endorsement. He didn't say that either. And my question is not about Cruz. My question is about whether you think in swing states for Trump, those are different states than the traditional swing states, but swing states for Trump, this is going to present any difficulty. It really doesn't matter in Texas how much the Republican Party is unified. The Republicans win Texas. Will this hurt in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in North Carolina, in those kinds of states that are absolutely crucial for Trump to win the presidency?
Yeah, Professor, I just don't know. I don't think it will. You know, as we look at it, again, this is a different campaign than I ever expected we'd be seeing. You know, even 12 months ago, I had no idea that it would have gone this way. But you know what? We've heard over and over again how Donald Trump, with 16, 17 people in the primary, still had the largest number of Republican votes of any Republican candidate ever in a primary. And it's been many times in these states that haven't necessarily been Republican states or strong hoped for states by Republican candidates. So I think you're right. I think there's going to be some states in play that wouldn't have been for any other candidate that are for Donald Trump and Mike Pence candidacy. Ultimately, it's you know, this is really the kickoff of the campaign. Those of us who are part of this feels like it's already gone on forever, but a lot of people just now are paying attention, and as we get into Labor Day and beyond, that's a decision people are going to have to be making. This is a pivotal election. You know, really, do we want Hillary Clinton? It's basically continuation of what we've had in the past. A lot of concerns, both Republicans and Democrats, about does she bring fresh ideas? Is she someone we can trust? Is she going to do things that keep us safe or make us safe? And then someone like a Donald Trump, where there's a little bit of unknown factor there, but he has proven himself in the work that he's done that he's someone who gets the job done. He speaks his mind. Sometimes we don't like that, but people want it. They want someone that's going to say what they mean and mean what they say and actually follow through on what they said they were going to do. And I think Donald Trump and I know Mike Pence are people that are going to do that.
So Congressman, are we getting, and I say we because you and I are both Republicans, and of course Professor Lipson is it kind of does his own thing, as professors do, and Justin is a host.
That's why we have tenure, so, my friend.
That's right. But you and I are real Republicans here, and are we getting from this convention what we need to win in November? And specifically, is it not, and I know you were there until today, I guess you flew back today, yeah, but is this not a second edition of Tampa, which I think was the worst convention of my probably my entire life?
Good question.
Yeah, I think it is a good question, too, and I think it's too early to tell. You know, again, this is a different election than I've ever seen in my lifetime. I pay attention to these things. I care about these things. This is just a whole different time. So I don't know. We'll have to see. But I do think people are paying attention. It's one of the things that frustrates me so much over the years. We see low voter turnout. You know, we see apathy among people, a lot of people who say, I'm not voting, it doesn't matter, my vote doesn't matter. You don't hear that this year. I think people are engaged. They feel strongly. Sometimes, you know, what's motivating them the most to support a candidate is because they dislike the other candidate so much. So it's interesting. I think out of this convention, my hope is that we will be a little bit more unified, that, you know, this is a process forward. You don't expect to come out lockstep. That's part of our party as well, Chris. Huh. You know it. We're independent thinkers. We let people, we kind of celebrate that of, hey, think for yourself. We don't need government to tell us how to think. We can think for ourselves. And I think people are going to analyze that, make that decision of who they think the ticket, the administration that would best serve to get this economy growing again, to make sure that we're safe, to put Supreme Court justices in that really respect the Constitution and reflect our values. I think these are all important decisions that the American people are going to have to make going forward. I'm hopeful. I mean, I think even looking at poll numbers, it's going to be a close election. And I think Governor Pence hit it on the head at the end of his speech that this is going to be tough. This is going to be a battle. And we're going to have to make sure we're engaged. And the good news is people are paying attention.
Congressman Randy Hulgren of the 14th District of Illinois, part of the Illinois delegation. Congressman, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks, Justin. Great to be with you guys. Have a great night.
All right. There you go.
There was an interesting point about whether the convention, Chris raised a really good question. Is this a convention that does what it needs? Convention has to do two things. Convention has to rally the party. Convention has to make a case to the country. I think that they've muddled the case. I think that the case ought to be, are you safer now than you were 7 years ago?
Well, that's good.
Are you better off economically than you were 7 years ago? If you think you are, go with the status quo. If not, go for a change.
Charles Lipson, Chris Roebling in studio. We'll take a break. We'll get the news. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation, wrapping up the RNC coverage here at 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, wrapping up some coverage of the Republican National Convention. Day three, Chris Roebling and Charles Lipson in studio.
Yes.
A tremendous night as we kind of get up to speed here, as now the speeches are done. I mean, we're caught up on business. But, I mean, if you're the newspaper tomorrow morning, if people still do that, where they throw the newspaper on your doorstep at 5 in the morning, what's the headline?
The headline for me is... Ted Cruz doesn't endorse Donald Trump. I mean, that's huge news. Normally, conventions like this are pretty tightly scripted, but this whole year has been unscripted. Nobody thought Trump would get this far. Nobody thought that all the establishment candidates would go down and go down early. Everybody thought that coming out, that Trump would be a three-month candidate and then gone. When he didn't go, they thought everybody's running for the second spot or another lane, which was going to be the establishment lane. The last two people standing were Donald Trump, a one-off kind of character, and Ted Cruz, who represented the kind of conventional, a social conservative and fiscal conservative hardline constitutionalist position, and
establishment was nowhere to be
found. This is a really interesting political year.
An underreported story is the fact that Trump, in the run-up to the convention, especially in the last 2.5-3 weeks, has become embraced by the establishment. I mean, a lot of establishment figures. Now, this isn't stuff that's on the front page of the paper, but he has met with a lot of establishment folks, and that's why
establishment Republicans,
why that Democrat former general is out as vice president, and that's why we've got Mike Pence as vice president, and that's why you've got Trump sort of signaling that he's going to play ball. Okay, but then and we have to say, maybe you attribute it to Trump's leadership, that he still has Cruz come in and he still gives Cruz the microphone and the lectern for a 25-30 minute speech.
But you mentioned it. I mean, there is no situation in which that speech has not been vetted. I mean, everybody from the campaign, the convention, they know. Does Ted Cruz change it at the last minute?
No. Look, the way I would see it, and I'm speaking as an outsider here, is he had enough votes that it would be very, very costly for Trump to say you don't get a speaking position in a prominent place. He won a lot of states.
Right.
He came in number two. And so you have to ask yourself, what does Trump have to negotiate with him that would get him to do something positive for Trump? And I don't know what the behind the scenes story is, and we're going to learn that over the next few days. It may be that Ted Cruz was angered about the personal attacks. It may be that he felt Donald Trump wasn't conservative enough, but there must have been a behind closed doors meetings, and Ted Cruz didn't come out of that satisfied.
All right, let's go to Andrea Darlis, WGN Radio. She is at the Quicken Loan Center in Cleveland, Ohio. Andrea, big night tonight. From your perch, how was the speech with how was the reaction to the to Governor Pence's speech?
You know, the reaction to Governor Pence's speech was actually great. I have to say, I was way up at the top for both from the Cruz speech to the Gingrich speech, all the way up to the Pence speech. And the Gingrich speech went a lot longer than I thought it would. But the Pence reaction was great. And did you guys catch the fake air kiss at the end?
No.
Yeah, I mean, social media, I saw it.
Right.
Between Trump and
Pence. Too.
Yeah, right.
You know, I also saw a tweet. Now, I didn't see this because I was pretty high up for the latter half of the evening. But I saw a tweet that Heidi Cruz was escorted out of the Q Center with a lot of security because of the booze that her husband got. Now, again, the Twitterverse is its own realm.
Yeah.
But that's a tweet that I did see, and I didn't witness that, but I thought, huh.
Well, you know, the microphones for us, I mean, they did the broadcast that we played. I mean, obviously the microphones are from the stage, and the New York delegation was right up front, and it was pretty raucous. Like, they were getting that. You could feel the fervor of the, you know.
And speaking of which, it goes back to 64 and Nelson Rockefeller, who was booed in the 64 convention because, of course, he was leading the Never Goldwater, Never Goldwater.
And it felt a little 68 with Mayor Daley and the
Abraham Ribicoff.
Abraham Ribicoff. Andrea, like, I mean, as people, we were just kind of, I asked Charles, I asked Chris in studio, just if you they were newspaper editors, what would be the headline? For you being in the stadium there, you know, as part of the convention, what do you think the headline is tomorrow for the news?
The headline's absolutely going to be the Ted Cruz booze, number one, and number two, the air kiss. Only because I know how social media takes off these days. I'm telling you guys, when I walked out into that 4th Street corridor, I actually met up with Rowan Anna and Jeff Carlin, their producer.
Oh.
And that was the first part of the discussion.
The air kiss is not going to – but the Cruz – it's got to be Cruz booed after non-endorsement.
For sure.
Yeah.
Even so much a non-endorsement. I think they said that he mentioned Donald Trump's name one time.
He did at the beginning.
He congratulated Trump on winning the nomination.
Yeah, he didn't even say he was voting for him.
Right.
Well, I mean, for you, I mean, obviously today was the big powerhouse day, but tomorrow, I mean, it's on for Donald Trump. It's his day to shine.
I got to tell you something. I'm, I, I, I don't know, Andre, if you heard any of this. We had Randy Hultgren, the congressman from the far west suburbs, on, and I asked him, Republican to Republican, are we getting what we need out of this? And he said, well, I'm not really sure. We don't know yet, which was, you know, kind of made my knees buckle. But in any case, I want to say, as a Republican, I don't hear it yet. And this is what I mean. This is one element of what I mean. Somebody has got to stand up in front of that convention, and they have to say the following. I want every one of you to understand that if you go back home after this convention with this nominee for president and Mike Pence for vice president, and you do what you did last time, Hillary Clinton is going to be the 45th president of the United States. You have got to go home. Every one of you, you have to go home, and you've got to find another 150 people, another 250 people. You got to get people involved.
I guess here's a great question for you, Andrea, being in the room and even being up in the nosebleeds. Do you feel that the speech, I mean, we talked about unity and you're hearing from people that they're united, but are they motivated? Are people excited? Oh, no. Are you feeling the energy?
No, I mean, I'm feeling the energy because it's the RNC and it's in Cleveland, and this is what each party does. But there's a clear lack of unity, is I guess how I would put it.
Really?
You know, what I would call it? A reluctant unity. Because they, you know, the Republicans at this point, at least this is my perception and my perspective from what I saw tonight, everyone's trying to come together. It's a reluctant unity because they realize this is their candidate. They have to get behind him for the betterment of the party. But are they happy about it? No.
Well, Andrea, you've got a big day tomorrow. You've got the Illinois delegation. You've got to check in with Steve and the show in the morning. Thanks for staying up tonight and giving us an update.
Are you sleeping in a broom closet at the Q Center? I mean, you know, how do you do this?
I'm hopping an Uber with Anna DeVlantis right now. There you go. So I'm going to
give Anna our best. Say hi to her for all three of us.
I will. Okay. I will. And we love you guys. And we'll check in with you tomorrow.
All right. Well, Andrea Darlis from Cleveland.
She's the hardest working woman in broadcasting. Get that woman a raise.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up our coverage tonight of the Republican National Convention. Day 3, it's 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's a download here. Wrapping up, Patty Vasquez comes up next. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. In studio with me, Charles Lipson and Chris Roebling. They've been here all night. They're troopers. They're going to be back tomorrow night for the big event, Donald Trump live from the Republican National Convention. And you can hear the speech, analysis, reaction, all of it here on 720 WGN. The takeaway from tonight, we already said Ted Cruz. The one thing that I thought Andrea said best was reluctant unity.
Which is to say, not full unity. And we've said several times during the evening that you need more than 90% of the votes of the true loyalists in your own party, the people who already identify. And I think that's going to be an uphill struggle for Donald Trump. So I think that's one of the issues. I think there was a second muddle to the convention so far. I think that they have missed nailing their two biggest issues. Are you safer now at home and internationally than you were 8 years ago? Are you better off in terms of your economic future and that of your children than you were 8 years ago? Mm-hmm. If you aren't, vote for us. We promise change on those issues. If you think you're doing better, vote for the status quo. And they ought to nail that. They promised to nail it, and they didn't.
Yeah, so far I think that the convention is not giving the Republicans out across the country what the Republicans need, and that is a clear reason to do more, a lot more, than they did 4 years ago. If rank-and-file precinct Republicans do not get out of their comfort zone of whatever it was that they did to support Romney— then we're going to see the same result. Mm-hmm. Okay, you want to get this guy over the top. Let's leave aside the issue. Did we want him? Did we want Marco? Did we want Ted? Who? Scott Walker,
right,
whatever.
Right, right.
That's all ancient history now. He's it. And what are you going to do different this time to put him over the top?
Well, Donald Trump is now tweeting out. Pete's got it. Pete, what did Donald Trump say tonight about the Ted Cruz fiasco?
9 minutes ago, Donald Trump tweeted, "Wow, Ted Cruz got booed off the stage, didn't honor the pledge. I saw his speech 2 hours early, but let him speak anyway. No big deal."
Hmm. What do you think of
8,000
retweets and likes? Yeah. What do you think of that response from Donald Trump?
I think that Trump is showing a little bit of class there, actually. I think that Trump is getting above it. Trump's getting beyond it. And I think that Ted Cruz cannot get around the fact that he pledged to support the Republican nominee. And at his moment to say that he was supporting the Republican nominee,
he
came up short.
The Republican base has rejected the Republican leadership. And what you see now is that the old leadership and some of the traditional conservatives in the party are rejecting the nominee. So there is a deep cleavage.
Yeah,
I must say there is a deep cleavage in the Democratic Party. And we will see that next week,
and
too.
We'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow, because you're going to see a different... I mean, it's Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, but Bernie Sanders has already taken the stage with Hillary Clinton and said he endorses her. So when he goes to the stage and he puts the focus on Trump and he says he endorses it and he's emphatic, he's going to put a little emphasis on that. Is that going to make Ted Cruz look better or worse? I think it makes him look worse.
It's going to make him look worse.
Yes, absolutely. Chris is right. I would also say Ted Cruz, if any of this looks as if it's personal as opposed to a kind of deeply political, Ted Cruz is going to be just covered in muck. And if it looks as if the Republican nominee didn't win because Republican elected officials undercut the nominee, Ted Cruz is going to be covered in muck, not in glory.
Yeah, Cruz is beginning to look like one of the insiders against whom he has positioned himself, not just for his service in the Senate, but for his candidacy for the presidency. He said, look, there are all these Mitch McConnell insiders. He stood on the floor of the Senate.
Right, he was an outsider.
He said, these guys, they say one thing and they do another. Mitch McConnell said we would get a vote on our amendment, and we just learned that we're not getting a vote. They're ramming it down our throat. Okay, so now what does he do? He goes out and he says, I don't know, 10 months ago, I pledge hereby to support the nominee. Then when it comes time to do it at personal cost, no question about it, he doesn't come through. Well, now he's looking like one of those insiders.
But let me ask you this, because, you know, you hear all this flip-flop kind of thing that you know, what some candidate said 3 years ago. Ted Cruz wants a political future. He's eyeing 2020, you know, maybe 2024. But the point being that he's eyeing it, and he knows that, you know, if he's going to run on a conservative platform, a conservative Republican platform, it's going to look bad if he just goes up in the Republican committee or convention in 2016 and goes, Donald Trump's our guy. He made his case for the country. He made an eloquent speech about freedom, whether you like that or not. And he just stopped short of playing the game.
His speech was a great speech.
He had a great speech.
Until people got toward the end, you could hear in the crowd there was a real question. And it's the bottom of the ninth, and he said, I'm going to hit a homer in some other game. And you just heard a lot of people in the crowd. I'm not speaking as an advocate for one side or another. I'm just saying that you heard a lot of Republicans. There's going to be a lot of blowback around this.
There is going to be a lot of blowback. Republicans do not go for this kind of thing. He has injured his brand. He's injured the definition that he's worked so hard to create.
His defense of himself is that I am a principled conservative. Donald Trump has not proven himself to be, and I am not going to endorse somebody who does not stand up for this principle, that principle, and so forth. But that's why Mike Pence and Newt Gingrich coming out tried to successfully push back, and I think successfully, that he's just got it wrong.
Well, Scott Walker did a phenomenal job
tonight.
Scott Walker, we could be talking about Scott Walker. We could be talking about Mike Pence. Instead, we're talking about Ted Cruz.
Yeah,
but I can tell you, for the Republicans at home watching tonight, Scott Walker is on his way to serious consideration in the future, and I think Ted Cruz has severely limited his options.
I will say this, Chris, on Touche on Monday, you said the Republicans are not very good at this, at putting on conventions and shows. This is not our forte. It's Wednesday night. It almost, I mean, you kind of called it. I mean, there is a lot of tripping and falling and falling off top of each other. Now, Donald Trump, could save it.
It all depends on the Thursday night speech, but let's see how they react tomorrow morning. I am going to sit here tonight. I don't think I'm going out on a limb. They are going to be excoriating Cruz. And they're going to be saying, you know, the guys who are not happy about Trump, some of them had the dignity not even to show up. But Cruz came here at Trump's request, and he failed to deliver his part of that.
This is looking too much like mud wrestling and not enough like a coherent convention.
Charles Charles Lipson, University of Chicago political science professor. Chris Roebling, the better half of Touche, that you can hear every Monday here on The Download. You guys back tomorrow night. We will continue this tomorrow night as we give you live.
Touche.
Give you the live presentation of Donald Trump speaking at the Republican National Convention. What a night. What a night. What a night. I love it. Live radio at its best. Being able to be in the moment with that Ted Cruz speech, that's good. That's good. I'll always remember it here at WGN Radio. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. I got to say, Rob, looking forward to tomorrow.
Absolutely.
I feel like I might, you know, I got to get my beauty sleep, get ready for this, man. That's going to be
the one guy who will not earn enough money tomorrow night, the teleprompter operator when Trump's up on stage. How many times is he going to have to back that thing up?
Do I go forward? Do I go back? I don't know where I'm at.
Where is he? Where is he?